Welcome, everyone, to episode 220 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to bring back our Bye Felicia series because a couple teams have been knocked out of the playoffs. So we are going to say goodbye to the Indiana Pacers, the Detroit Pistons, and a couple of the holdovers that we didn't get to, the Miami Heat and Charlotte Hornets. Before we get to all that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. So in two games against the Oklahoma City Thunder, Damian Lillard is averaging 20 points in the third quarter in OKC on road games.
Yeah. He's decent.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
Yeah. Russell Westbrook is averaging, in the second half of game four, he averaged 0.5 points per quarter. very impressive performance. Since we did so much on those three competitive series last time, and since we're kind of waiting for, we're recording this on Tuesday, so we have a bunch of game fives tonight. We're assuming that at least Toronto closes out. I am selfishly hoping that the Sixers close out, and then we've got San Antonio, Denver, OKC, Portland. We're hoping to record a round two preview on Friday because I'm going out of town this weekend, so hopefully, as much as I'd like to see a Game 7 in Denver, San Antonio, or Portland, OKC, hopefully those things are over in six and we can give you guys a full round two preview Friday. Otherwise, we will be doing a partial one. But today, since we've lost two teams from the playoffs already, and we had two left over from the Eastern Conference melee for the 7th and 8th seed that we didn't get to before the playoffs started,
They're boring.
Yeah. Well, we're going to start with the two that just got knocked out because they're the more recent and more relevant, and their salary cap sheets aren't a complete tire fire. So let's start more with the Indiana Pacers, because of the four teams we're going to talk about today, I'd say the Pacers have the most room for optimism moving forward, just in terms of, we've been saying this for a while now. Had Victor Oladipo not gotten hurt, the Pacers would have been the three seed, and we would have had Boston and Philly in the first round, and I would not have slept for the past week. So I am grateful that the Sixers avoided that situation, but the Pacers got swept by the Celtics because they just, without Oladipo, each game was pretty close, and each game they got down to crunch time, and the Pacers just didn't have a go-to option then.
Right.
It was very kind of reminiscent of the Sixers-Celtics series last year, where all of the games were close, but you just knew the Celtics, you felt like they weren't actually in danger of losing any of those games. Like, they were just far more in control in these late game situations because they knew what they wanted to run, who they wanted to get open, and they had more control, whereas Indiana was relying on Tyreke Evans, and that's never gonna end well.
They were out talented in every way.
Yeah,
I think that's fair to say. I am curious though, because while I agree with you, I think most would agree with your assessment that there's a lot of optimism surrounding this team. Mm-hmm. But when you really break it down, is there, though? Your best player is injured. Mm-hmm. Your presumed second best player is... He's not a bust, but he's certainly not the star that you thought he would be. And some of your most crucial role players are unrestricted free agents coming up this season and could leave for nothing. Yeah. I mean, there is also a scenario wherein this goes absolutely horribly wrong.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, so, as you mentioned, it's Oladipo is under contract, Miles Turner is under contract, Sabonis is up for an extension this summer, but he's still under contract.
His extension wouldn't kick in until 2020.
Yeah, exactly. Other than that, though, Thad Young's a free agent, Tyreke Evans is a free agent, Bojan Bogdanovic is a free agent, Darren Collison's a free agent, Corey Joseph is a free agent, Kyle Quinn is a free agent, Wesley Matthews is a free agent.
And Doug McDermott isn't, which...
Correct, correct. Doug McDermott is under contract for two more years. So, yeah, there's definitely a world in which the Pacers just get picked apart this summer. And, lose a lot of these guys, and then they're nowhere near as good next year. So I guess, Mort, the question is, if you're the Pacers, if you're Kevin Pritchard right now,
right,
who are you prioritizing among that group to retain?
Bojan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Look, I like Thaddeus Young. I really do. And I think it all depends on the price for Young.
Mm-hmm.
He's 30. He has a lot of mileage. He came into the league very young.
Mm-hmm.
He's played a lot of games, a lot of minutes. So you have to wonder at some point, you know, when will his body begin to slow down? Because the way that he plays defense and the way he gambles with balls and throws his body down, like he's a fierce player. You know, you had him in Philly back in the day.
Yeah.
Like he's a very, very active player. So you can look at the minutes count and effectively add 25% to it just because of the way that he plays.
Mm-hmm.
So while I would love for the Pacers to retain him, it has to be under the right circumstances. It shouldn't be like a 3 or 4 year contract, maybe 2 years, and the money needs to make sense.
Yeah.
But Thaddeus Young and Bojan Bogdanovic, those are the two. Tyreke Evans, nope. Darren Collison, nope. Corey Joseph, nope. Kylo Quinn, no. You can probably do better. Mm-hmm. And I think you just need something else. You need more offense. They are kind of in a Utah Jazz situation. They just do not have enough firepower. Okay. And it blows my mind how many NBA teams are still stuck in this mindset of, oh, a defensive-oriented team will win in 2019. No, this is not the case anymore. You need firepower. You cannot get by with just one score. Yeah. I know that they were hoping for Miles Turner to become like the secondary guy behind Depot, but that's clearly not happening. Mm-hmm. So, do we know about Depot's status for next season in terms of the, you know, the long-term ramifications of that injury? Like, we honestly have no idea.
Right.
You need a safety blanket, is what I'm saying. You need more firepower. You need more offense.
Yeah.
Go get it.
I mean, I could not have been more wrong about Tyreke Evans. I thought he was just going to be that missing piece for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I picked him as my sixth man of the year coming into the season.
Yes, you did. You were very, very high on him. I remember I was actually leaning into your hype, and right. I hate that I shouldn't,
right.
Or that I did. I'm no longer gonna let you influence me this way, Brian.
I mean, he was so good in Memphis last year. I know it was out of nowhere, but I thought, I don't know, maybe in the right usage he would be better. But then he comes out and shoots a career worst, 38.9% overall. Yeah, his 3-point shooting regressed. It was just a disaster. So yes, I agree with you. Tyreke Evans is not a priority. Bojan's number one with a bullet. The rest of them, it comes down to price. I think it's really tricky because they also have to figure out, aside from the unrestricted free agents, I think the big question looming over this franchise, and Tim Bontemps of ESPN wrote about it the other day, is whether Miles Turner and Sabonis are compatible long-term together. Now, I don't know the answer to that question. Like a lot,
I'm probably leaning no.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a lot of scouts and executives think both guys are traditional fives, and you just can't. Like the Pacers have tried playing them together, but I think heading into Game 4 at least, they were getting pretty well worked whenever those two shared the floor against Boston.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. As much as I love Sabonis, he's primarily an offensive-driven player.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a long wingspan. That was also the big knock coming in on, you know, him coming into the draft a couple years ago. He's not overly athletic. He doesn't have long arms. Defensively, he can be a good positional defender, like in a team scheme sense, but he's not an overwhelming one-on-one defender or post defender. And you probably will need, if he's like the center of the future, who's like just the starting center, you will need more defense out of that position than what he can provide.
Mm-hmm.
Turner, to his credit, does provide that, but he offers just nothing in terms of offensive stability. unlike Sabonis is what I mean. Like offensive stability is is just completely insane, right? Like he passes, he shoots, he scores at a high rate.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's offensively, he's very, very low on weaknesses, whereas Turner is a reluctant shooter. He's not a guy who's severely dominant. And so you have to mix and match. I think potentially down the line, assuming they get Sabonis for the right price, you know, Sabonis should just be backup to Turner.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It's just not an optimal situation, is it?
No. I mean, so I just pulled it up. During the regular season, they played 429 minutes together.
Right.
They had a defensive rating of 96.5, which would have led the league like
by miles. Good, yeah.
They had when those two were on the floor, the Pacers had an offensive rating of 99.6.
Ugh.
Which again goes back to what you're saying is yes, like the Pacers were a great defensive team, both regular season and playoffs, and that's the reason they were able to keep it together as long as they did without Oladipo. They had that identity, and I think they can keep that identity. I mean, Miles Turner was a great shot blocker this year. But I think you're right. They do need more offense, and this is why, even in the final weeks of the season, once it became clear that Philly couldn't draw Boston in round one, I was wondering, like, should Philly tank to four and draw the Pacers instead? I was less afraid of the Pacers than I was the Nets, because the Nets, in terms of talent, are getting out-talented these last couple of games, but they just, all of those three-point shooters are so high variance, and I think that's what you want to avoid in a playoff series, is we saw it in game one. If those shooters get hot, you know, they can bury you in a second. Indiana, yeah. They ranked 29th in three-point makes and 29th in three-point attempts this year. They, much like the Spurs, they shot it at a high percentage. They were fifth in the league in terms of three-point shooting percentage, but they just don't have, like, they're going to beat you up with a lot of twos, basically, which is, I'm okay with that if I'm playing them in the playoffs.
Like, I don't even consider that, you know, them beating someone up with long twos.
Right. And they didn't draw free throws at a high rate. They were 23rd in attempts, 26th in makes. Like, it's just not the offensive profile of a team that's going to go deep in the playoffs. And yes, like, Oladipo's injury definitely affected that. They would have probably been better, or they clearly would have been better with him on the floor for the whole year, and those ranks might have gone up a little bit because he was at least one of their higher volume three-point shooters. But, like, they just don't. I mean, aside from until they brought Wes Matthews in, they had Oladipo on the season averaged 6 three-point attempts per game. Bojan averaged 4.8, which is way too low. Yeah. Way too low for a guy who shot 42.5%.
Yeah, those two decimals to just turn around.
Yeah, exactly. The next highest three-point shooter on that team was Tyreek Evans at 3.1. And then no one else averaged more than three threes a game. Like, that's just not, that's not how you win in 2019. No.
I don't need to go back to my Miles Turner rant, right?
No.
It's so obvious that he's like that. That's really. Do you think it would work between him and Sabonis and basically generate more to the Pacers' offense if he just started launching like Kevin Love?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. When you were talking about Sabonis, it made me think that Sabonis is what. Remember when, like, NBA Twitter used to crap on Nikola Jokic because, like, all the advanced stat people were like, "Hey, Jokic is really good," and everyone's like. Mm-hmm. No, he's just a fat doughboy, and he sucks. He's terrible. I feel like Sabonis is what the haters on NBA Twitter thought Jokic was.
Oh, that's interesting. But the thing is, Sabonis is really good. So if there are haters, I mean,
but you know,
and to Jokic's credit, I didn't see as much as you did. I know that you would frequently point something out to me, but was it really that intense?
Oh yeah.
Wow. Well, that's troublesome.
Not this year, but in years past. Like,
yeah, of course. He's undeniable. Summer
in NBA Twitter when it's an absolute war zone and you should just log off for a couple months. Yes, there were frequent. It was just like, you know, people would always bring up, like, Jokic is like near the top of the list in RPM and all that stuff. And then everyone's like, yeah, but the Nuggets suck and he sucks and he's terrible and he's European and he's fat. Just like Luka Doncic.
I was waiting for it. I was absolutely waiting for it.
Yeah.
So what do you think about Sabonis moving forward? Because let's look at his like career arc so far.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has gotten significantly better on a year-to-year basis.
For sure.
Like, and for some reason, like, we don't really talk about Sabonis as a guy with a high floor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we kind of assume that he's gonna like stay put where he is all the time. Like, this dude averaged 14 points, 9 rebounds, and 3 assists in just under 25 minutes a game. Shot 59% from the field.
Yeah.
And 71.5% from the free throw line on frankly, quite a lot of attempts in limited minutes, 3.9. Like, this dude can ball.
Yeah.
I think really what it comes down to is, instead of deciding, you know, between him or Turner or whatever, I think you just kind of need to pivot. And you need to put a team around Sabonis that would also be utilized optimally with Depot. Mm-hmm. Like, those are the two pieces moving forward I would just try to build around. And then whatever Miles Turner gives me offensively, I'll take. Like, obviously, defensively, he's like a DPOY candidate. So it's not like he doesn't have value. It's the offensive disappointment that's been a problem. Mm-hmm. But if you optimize the talent of Sabonis and Depot, like, maybe you can actually negate some of that disappointment in Turner.
Yeah, and I mean, here's the thing to keep in mind with both of these guys. Turner just turned 23 at the end of March. Sabonis turns 23 at the beginning of May. These guys are still really young, and it often takes bigs and point guards more time than wings to figure it out in the NBA. So I wouldn't necessarily give up hope on either guy. I just think they need more time to figure it out together, and...
Right.
You know, the Pacers so vastly exceeding expectations last year, and then, you know, they didn't exceed expectations this year in large part because of the Oladipo injury, but they still, you know, won close to 50 games. They were still a clear playoff team. Had Depot stayed healthy, they would have, you know, been right in that mix. I don't think they're far away from the tier of, like, locked in the playoffs every year. But the question is, how do they get to where Milwaukee is, or to where Boston might be next year, or where Toronto is if Kawhi stays, or where Philly is if they keep all of their guys? I think that's the tricky thing moving forward, and it's almost like they just have to nail a draft pick and get another guy, or get really lucky in free agency. But I don't think, like, even if all of these guys walk, like Kevin Durant or Kawhi Leonard or Kyrie Irving are not signing with the Indiana Pacers. So
agreed.
Yeah, so like maybe they have to get, I don't know, maybe they nail their free agent signings or nail a draft pick, but like they have to get lucky somewhere and hit on someone we're not expecting to take that next step forward, I think.
So they have the 18th pick.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, and it's, you know, a somewhat weak draft. It's not like there isn't talent to be had, but you know the odds of finding something of tremendous value at that position, especially this year, is not high.
Right.
So what do you think they should do? I personally think they should go all in on potential. Like, just find one of the youngest guys available who has significant offensive upside, and just go with that and see what they can do. I get that that's not in a win-now mentality based on the ages of everyone else, but as you just touched on, like, both Turner and Sabonis are young, so that young player would still be able to develop in that vein. And just because you mentioned, I just have to bring it up, by the way. I get what you're saying about the age, and that big men take a long time, longer at least, to get better. But as I think I've told you this before, go look at Miles Turner's per 36 minutes over his career. It's like virtually the same.
Yeah, yeah.
From year one to now. And at least with Sabonis, like, you can see the development curve. You can see the increased production. You can see the increased just talent, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
That is what makes me skeptical about Turner. It's not, I'm not trying to hate on the kid. Obviously, defensively, he's outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just seeing a guy who's probably not going to turn into the 22-point player that people thought he would.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. The Pacers, like, they could either get much better this summer, much worse, or kind of tread water, but they have a very wide range of outcomes this summer, which I think the other three teams we're going to talk about, not as much today.
Agreed. They are... Financially, they have some flexibility that a lot of these teams can't say.
Yeah. So let's move into one of these teams that does not have financial flexibility. The other team that got knocked out of the playoffs last night, the Detroit Pistons. And to no one's surprise, the Milwaukee Bucks swept them. Blake Griffin did come back for games 3 and 4 and played as well as he could on one knee. But unfortunately, I mean, the Pistons just never had a chance. So now you look ahead, and Blake Griffin, Andre Drummond, and Reggie Jackson next year alone are owed about $79.6 million. The salary cap's going to be $109 million. So throw in, you know, John Lewis making 9.5, Langston Galloway's making 7.3, Josh Smith still getting paid $5.3 million by the Detroit Pistons next year. It is
the final year. Yeah.
It is the last year Josh Smith will be on their cap, but he's still getting paid. And then, like, Luke Kennard, Thon Maker. So they're not going to have any cap space, realistically, or at least notable cap space. So basically, your two options are you hit on a draft pick, you hit on your mid-level exception or your biannual exception, and that rockets you forward. Or, you know, Reggie Jackson is entering the last year of his deal. Andre Drummond is entering the last year, possibly the last year of his deal. He has a $28.7 million player option for 2020-2021. And then Blake Griffin is under a guaranteed contract for two more years and has a player option for $38.9 million in 2021-2022. So, if you're Detroit, what do you do? Do you keep your so-called big three together for one more year and then see what happens in 2020 if Drummond opts out and Jackson will be a free agent regardless? Or are you starting to at least quietly shop Drummond and or Griffin around this summer?
No, I mean, you're right on the mark that you need trades. I mean, you mentioned the mid-level and draft, but I think there's a trade out there to be had. Like, as you said, Reggie Jackson is coming into his final year. So is John Lewis and Langston Galloway. Maybe you could actually use those expiring contracts, package them with the 15th pick that they will have this year for someone of significance, someone who's higher up on the food chain, a Mike Conley. I'm totally ripping this idea from Duncan Smith, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't think that was the particular package he suggested, but like, you can do something.
Right.
You can do something with those contracts. And then, yeah, you get a little bit more top-heavy, but that's probably okay when you think about it. Like, what's the alternative right now? You can't go into a full rebuild at this point because then you'd have to shed a lot of deals, and it's just, like, that would make the entire acquisition of Blake Griffin just pointless. It just doesn't make sense. If you somehow just improve the top end of the roster, like, fine. That's I don't necessarily think that's would be a marginal move. I think that could be quite considerate or considerable. But it's not going to make them a challenger for the title. It's probably going to make them like the fourth or fifth. Oh, maybe not fourth, but fifth or sixth seed.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like depending on what happens with Indiana and Toronto.
Right.
Like, Boston, no matter what, is going to be fine next summer. Or, like, in 2019-2020. Well, even if Kyrie leaves, no, they'll be fine. They'll still have Tatum, Brown, Smart, Horford, Hayward. They'll be fine.
Yeah, sure, but, like, define fine.
A top four seed in the East.
Oh, okay, yeah, because, I mean, they won't have the same status as they do now if they lose Kyrie.
Right, oh, no, but they would still be, no matter what Detroit does this summer, unless, like, they trade Reggie Jackson for Anthony Davis straight up.
Like, right.
You know, yeah, like, okay. No matter what happens to Boston this summer, they will be ahead of Detroit next year. And I think there's a non-zero chance they end up with Anthony Davis this summer, in which case that's the point. And, like, you know, I know all of these top East teams have key free agents with Kyrie in Boston, everyone in Milwaukee, Kawhi in Toronto, Jimmy and Tobias in Philly. So, like, yeah, there's a lot of disaster potential for all of these teams, and maybe Detroit moves up by default just because their three guys are locked in. But all of those teams, including Indiana, has a much higher ceiling than Detroit does right now, I think. So it goes back to the ownership question, really. What does Tom Gores want from this franchise? Is he okay with... Is a 45-win season and a first-round playoff knockout, is that okay? Is that, like, what he's shooting for? If so, then he's going to keep this roster together. And, yeah, maybe he tries to move Jackson for Conley or do something else. Or, I mean, does he realize this ceiling is capped? In which case, I think you do have to start consider some bigger trades. And Drummond seems like the most logical candidate to be moved in that regard, just because he's still really young. He puts up big numbers. And, you know, as we've alluded to, there's going to be more demand than supply of top-tier free agents this summer. So whichever team misses out, if the Lakers miss out on all their guys, you're telling me they wouldn't want a 25-year-old Andre Drummond?
Yeah. I mean, certainly possible. And I will say as much, I did write a piece about why Detroit should consider rebuilding for the B-ball writers. And but that was before Blake Griffin really began coming into his own as a Piston this year. Like, remember, he did have, like, a... I don't want to say he had a weak start to the season, but he wasn't as efficient or as effective as later on. Like, he kind of moved himself into a rhythm, and he just kept going. And that's what you could see. Like, they started winning a lot.
Yeah.
And that was in the regular season. I get it. That's not the playoffs. It's not necessarily a fair representation. But if they can just keep that string along and actually improve on the regular season wins by upgrading the roster, you're also going to get a higher seed, meaning you wouldn't necessarily have to play the Bucks. You wouldn't have to play the stronger teams in the playoffs. So does that take you into round two? Potentially. Like, that's four more games. That's the step-by-step progress. I'm not saying it's ultimately going to end up in an Eastern Conference Finals appearance.
Right.
But if they make it to round two, for the Pistons, who've been, let's be honest here, very inconsistent since the Ben Wallace, Chauncey Billups era, like, isn't that a win in and of itself?
Yeah. I mean, you could hope what happened to Portland this year. Like, the bracket might break just right. And maybe you do make it to an Eastern Conference Finals, or maybe you do have an easy first-round matchup and get to the second round. But you're right. I mean, they haven't won a playoff series in more than a decade now.
Yeah.
I don't think they've won a playoff game, right? Haven't they been swept three straight times?
Oh, it does feel like they were swept by LeBron, right?
Yep. They were swept. They were swept in 2008, 2009. They were swept this year. And their only other appearance was 2015-16, and they were swept again. So they haven't won a playoff game. Yeah, they haven't won a single playoff game in 11 years now.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah.
Well, that's where the hunger stems from, then. That's why they went all in on Blake. Yeah. They just wanted that one win. Give them something. Yeah.
Well, I have one Blake thought in a second, but since you mentioned B-ball writers, hey, Mort, are you tired of clickbait, ads, pop-up videos, talking head hyperbole, big market bias, and data selling? Are you tired of soap operas, wild speculation, and unnamed sources? Tired of padding the stats of CEOs and shareholders while your favorite content creators get paid pennies for their work? At bballwriters.com, they are too. That's why they created the Basketball Writers. At bballwriters.com, they concentrate on just the game and everything they love about it. NBA, WNBA, EuroLeague, fantasy basketball, the draft, and many more corners of the hoops universe they're soon to explore. All in one place on a blazingly fast, clean site that lets you choose which writer to directly support while still enjoying all of the content from their whole team. Elevate the conversation, elevate the game. I'll see you at bballwriters.com, and don't forget to enter the code THENBAPOD for 10% off your annual, monthly, or daily subscription. That is THENBAPOD for 10% off. So, Blake Griffin, do you think there's a market for him this summer?
Oh, I mean, there should be, just because of how great he is. But again, this is always the problem, isn't it? When you have a star who is in his smack dab middle in his prime, he's also earning top dollar, right? Meaning you would want to pair him with a contender.
Yeah.
But if you're a contender, odds are you're already very close to being capped out. So you can't just add like 30 plus million to your cap without giving up something else of, you know, significance, which means are you then just kind of shuffling around pieces?
So here's who I would target. If I'm the Pistons and I'm, you know, I don't think they are going to trade Blake Griffin. I should make that very clear. I think what he did, you know, I think they view him as like professionalizing the franchise again and like bringing back a winning culture to Detroit, blah, 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 all that stuff. So I think he's going to stay put. But
right.
If Sam Hinkie were running this team, Sam Hinkie would call Orlando right away because Orlando and Detroit are in similar spots, but Orlando, you know, is probably going to get swept, knocked out tonight. And like, yes, they made the playoffs, great, but they still have a lot of questions about that front court moving forward. So I would call Orlando, and I would say, give us Aaron Gordon, possibly Mo Bamba, and then you can flip Drummond to the Lakers or the Knicks or whatever other dumb, desperate team. Like, some combination of your young prospects. Aaron Gordon, because I just, again, if you think Isaac is your long-term four, that means Aaron Gordon's either playing the three, so he's playing out of position, or he's...
Yeah, but you just brought in Blake. So where's Jonathan going to play?
Yeah, I mean, that's... therein lies the problem with the Magic entirely. But, I mean, Isaac... Right. I don't know, maybe you play Blake as a small ball five. Maybe you just have, like, a weird non-positional front court. Because Isaac is a great shot blocker anyway.
Yeah, because they might lose Vooch.
Right.
Oh, so if they lose Vooch, which could definitely happen, and here's the thing, that he might actually go to the Lakers, in which case right. you can't move Drummond to the Lakers. Right. But then that's you a move different Drummond issue. To
the Knicks. Or, yeah. like, the Mavericks or something. I don't know. You'll find the
right, right, right. Yeah, you'll definitely find something.
Yeah.
But I okay, so we're actually talking about more of a, like, a perimeter-based system with Blake, who's actually become a much better defender. Not as a shot blocker, but, like, positional-wise, he's right. just better. And I would probably, you know, venture into that and see what could happen.
I just think a team like Orlando is going to be dumb and desperate this summer. Or, like, call up the Phoenix Suns, who have no effing plan and no idea what they're doing.
Yeah. And say, yeah, should we touch on that instead?
Well, yeah, so they fire their head coach today after 1 year and still have no organizational direction whatsoever. So call them and say, you need a star next to Ayton and Devin Booker. You're going to lose right. Devin Booker. You know, I know he signed long term, but, like, he's going to just check out. He's going to, like, develop all these bad habits. Ayton's going to stop giving a damn. You're going to lose everyone. Give us some combination of TJ Warren, Mikal Bridges, whatever your first round pick is, wherever it lands, maybe, like, top three protect, or just do it after the lottery. So who cares? You'll know what you're getting. One of Okobo or Melton, maybe another future first round pick. Like, I think you can dupe a team, a desperate, dumb team, into taking Blake Griffin this summer. And that's not saying that Blake Griffin had arguably his best season. Like, he had a hell of a year. And I think now is the time, like, if I'm running the Pistons, now is the time to sell high on him. Because I don't know what this core is going to accomplish as constructed, and I don't see a way out of this. And I know it's, like, counter to what they are trying to achieve, which is just build upon this, but... Like, I think you can get a really good haul for Blake Griffin and probably something decent for Andre Drummond, and I think that could be the core of your team moving forward.
Like you, I too am itching to press the big old red reset button for Detroit. Mm-hmm. I am. But looking at all the evidence that's out there for them in terms of them not wanting to do so, that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they seem very invested in just trying to add to this core, which I think is... In some respects, it's also pretty honorable. Yeah. Like, they don't want to just go down with the ship entirely. They actually wanted to keep it afloat while getting better. Mm-hmm. I think that's commendable in some ways. But I totally see where you're coming from. I, too, would be looking at just tearing things down. But that's who I am. If I was an NBA GM, I would be tearing down everything I just found a small problem with. No, that's hardcore. But you know what I mean. Yeah. I would definitely tear these, like, middling teams down. Yes. Because that's not where you want to be.
Yes.
The thing is, though, they've gone through so many rebuilds or attempted rebuilds, rather, and they've restructured and retooled and done all these things so many times. So, like, what's different now?
Yeah.
Why should we expect different results? Now they finally have, like, two stars. I get that they're playing, you know, both the big positions, and that's not optimal, especially in today's league, which, by the way, is a note for the Bulls as well moving forward. Which we can return to in another day, but they need something just to kind of facilitate that you know, those two stars. Like, they need a perimeter player, and that's not Reggie Jackson.
No,
that's not Glenn Robinson.
No,
could it be Luke Kennard moving forward? I'm not sure, but I will say that Kennard actually looks pretty good. I don't know. It's tough to envision them becoming significantly better.
Right.
But I do commend them for trying. And if they get Mike Conley, and they retain Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond and Luke Kennard, do we really care what else they gave up?
No.
Team is just, like you mentioned before we actually start recording, this team has no one. You basically screamed it like they have no one.
Well, I mean, look at their young pro. Like, yeah, Luke Kennard is fine. Svi is fine. Are you really feeling great about like Thon Maker and Bruce Brown
or Kyrie Thomas?
Yeah, like they just don't have any. They don't have a single young guy who I think like, okay, that guy has all star upside.
Right.
That seems like a problem for a team whose big three could all leave within the next 2 or 3 years.
Do you think that makes it tougher for them to rebuild when you think about it like right now because they don't have this blue chipper?
That's why I think they need to kind of blow it up now, because otherwise if these guys leave, if Drummond leaves in a year and they get nothing for him, or if Griffin leaves in 2 years and they get nothing for him, then they're going to be playing the lottery anyway, but they're going to have nothing to build around. If you at least get additional picks and or prospects for those guys,
right,
at least you kind of rig the odds in your favor a little bit more.
Would you then want to play this draft, though? When you really think about it, because of, you know, the proposed weakness of it or the lack of depth, rather.
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't you maybe rather just run it back one more year and then try to get into the 2020 draft instead? Or, you know, you could be really progressive, right? And you could just actively search out for 2022 picks.
I think, ideally, I think for Griffin, you could probably get multiple firsts. If like Tobias
on that deal though,
if Tobias Harris got multiple firsts on an expiring contract, knowing he was
younger, so much younger.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you could get multiple firsts. Like one would be protected, I'm assuming, but from a dumb team, I think.
Yeah. So how many dumb teams are there? We definitely know Phoenix is one because of what they just did. Yep. Knicks, obviously, the Lakers.
Yep. Lakers, obviously, yeah. They're so desperate. It's just desperation is going to drive a lot of these teams this summer.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think you're right. The Lakers could be one of those teams where you could dump a lot of crap. Yeah.
Especially because Jeannie Buss wants to give a middle finger to Steve Ballmer. What better middle finger than bringing in the guy who he traded away a year ago?
Right, and Steve Ballmer wouldn't care, but that's beside the point.
Right, exactly. He'd be like, good job. Great.
Yeah.
Great move. Yeah, I was thinking about, he turned Blake Griffin into, like, Shamit, at least 2 first-round picks from the Tobias deal, and I'm assuming, I don't remember what they got for him exactly, but I would assume he got a first-round pick for him as well. Like, it's just amazing. The Clippers are so good.
So what's the deal? Let's assume we've identified this.
Uh-huh.
That we do go off on a rebuild.
Yeah.
Like, fair enough. Griffin to the Lakers. Like, what young guys do you take back? I'm just going to say it right away. I'm not dealing with Lonzo Ball and all that.
No.
I'm not doing it.
And the Ingram thing is really complicated because of the health issue. So
it is.
I definitely take Kuzma and Hart.
Right.
And yeah, maybe after that I just want their picks.
Yeah. I would even sacrifice not taking Hart and getting picks.
Yeah.
Kuzma and picks.
Yeah.
Right? Kuzma and I think probably you won't be able to get 2 picks, but like maybe you can get Kuzma and a first rounder that might be like top 3 protected for a couple years.
Or, I mean, they don't give a damn about this year's pick at 11. I think you could easily, if they stay at 11, they don't care. Because that, by the time,
that's high enough.
Yeah, by the time that player is of age, LeBron's going to be long gone. They would give up 11 this year and then probably like a lottery protected pick 2 or 3 years down the road.
All right, then let's think this through. So you get Kuzma and you get 11. You already have 15.
Mm-hmm.
So then you will have 11 and 15, which would give you the choice of having 2 prospects that you can build with that are just, for all intents and purposes, in the lottery. Number 15 is just one pick outside of the lottery, but like for all intents and purposes. Or you could package those two and move up significantly higher in the draft and take someone you might feel is worth building around to at least a certain extent. Because when you get up, when you get high up enough in this draft, like, then we can talk about having guys that are, you know, difference makers. Like, if you get a DeAndre Hunter or a Jared Culver, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all right.
Or you could
now we're talking.
You can stay put and get, like, a Darius Garland, Bol Bol, Romeo Langford, Kevin Porter Jr.
Yeah, go with two. Maybe go with two super young guys at 11 and 15.
That's
what
I would
do. And just gamble on potential. Yeah, yeah, I could see that. Gamble on potential.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know what? You know what we should do? And we've talked about this before. We should get Duncan on. And we should just pick his brain.
Yeah.
I like this. I like this idea. I do. This is one of the few rebuilding ideas for the Pistons that I think makes sense.
Yeah.
I dig it.
I don't think they're going to do it. We should make that very clear. But
No. NBA teams never listen to us anyway, so it's fine.
But I think there would be a logical reason to try.
Yeah. Well, they did listen with the Otto Porter Jabari Parker
trade. That's true. That's true.
Huh. All right. Well, fair enough. And now Ernie Grant. Oh, but Ernie isn't there anymore.
Correct. So. Yeah, he's gone. All right, let's switch to another team that is in dire straits cap-wise, the Miami Heat. So, right now...
Sorry, I can't stop laughing and looking at that cap sheet.
It's incredible. So, they're not going to... I mean, they're going to presumably waive Ryan Anderson, and that saves them like $5.5 million, and then they have a couple
of... Husa.
Sorry?
I said, huzzah. That's not going to change a damn thing.
Because... Yeah. And then they have a couple other guys who they'll let go, and those cap holds will go off the books. But they're still most likely going to be a luxury tax team next year, assuming Goran Dragic and Hassan Whiteside both opt in.
Okay, come on. We need to read it out. We have to read it out. Let's assume that both Whiteside and Dragic picks up their options.
Yeah.
Let's assume for a second they won't waive Ryan Anderson, just for... You know, kicks.
Sure.
So, Whiteside, $27 million.
Yep.
Ryan Anderson, $15.6 million.
Yep.
Goran Dragic, $19.2 million. James Johnson, $15.3 million. Khalil Linick, $11.6 million. Deion Waiters, $12.1 million. Josh Richardson, $10.1 million. Justice Winslow, $13 million. That is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 guys earning well over $10 million a year.
Yeah. It's brutal.
It's horrible. And you know what? We often criticize the Charlotte Hornets, who we'll get to later on in this podcast, for their cap. But this is like, this is a 1875 freak show.
Yeah, I think this is the worst cap sheet in the league.
Like, oh, for at without, least for this season, yeah. Right? I mean, yeah.
Because this team is, they're just kind of stuck. Like, they're just going to be mediocre. We saw their ceiling last year. Was, you know, 44, 45-ish wins and a first-round knockout. Dwayne Wade is gone now, who I know, like, he wasn't Dwayne Wade of old, but he still did. He was still, like, better than Deion Waiters, who was signed for two more seasons for nearly $29 million. Like, I know, I mean, I'm sure Heat fans, if you've been longtime listeners, I'm sorry that we continue to criticize what you guys did in 2017, but... This is why we were worried about these four-year deals you handed out. Because this is where it was always going to come to haunt you. We're on these back years where you have Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow, and Bam Adebayo, all of whom we like. Those are three good young prospects. But there are just so many mediocre role-player veterans locked into eight-figure salaries that you're just kind of stuck.
Mm-hmm. This is why I proposed James Johnson for Evan Turner like 15 times.
Yeah. There's no real reason not to, because your cap space isn't a thing for you. Now the thing is, Pat Riley has already come out and said, you know, we're going to have at least one max cap spot in 2020. If by the grace of God, James Johnson and Kelly Olynyk decline their player options, they could have two. Yeah, I mean, I don't know why James Johnson's turning down $16 million unless Pat Riley was like, you can have a share of the Miami Heat franchise, just don't opt in. Kelly Olynyk, we'll give you a nice retirement package. Just please, God, do not take that $13.6 million from us. But, so that, I mean, what do you think? Is the 2019-2020 season, are they basically just punting on that and waiting for free agent help in 2020, and do you think that mission succeeds?
Well, I can't answer in terms of how if it succeeds or not. I mean, I don't know. We'll see in 2020. But I mean, do they have a different option of punting. I mean, I guess the one thing they could do, and that's a horrible option, that is they could trade these lesser players for slightly better players who have another year left on their deals, mm-hmm. just to get better. Mm-hmm. But they shouldn't do that. And as it sounds like from Pat Riley, they won't do that because they want double max cap space in 2020.
Right.
So, no, I mean, they almost have to punt.
Yeah.
I don't see what they can do. You just don't want a situation where you stretch a player.
No.
Because if they stretch a bunch of these guys, that's just going to be like eternal cap hits.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the worst thing you could do if you're the Heat right now is compound mistakes. And if you're really looking ahead to 2020 and you're convinced you're going to get two max guys, which I'm never going to doubt the Heat. Like, it's Miami. It's no state income tax. It's beautiful weather. Like, they do have that incumbent advantage that only a few other franchises, most of whom play in LA, have. So,
mm-hmm.
like, NBA players love Miami. That's not a question.
Right.
The problem is you need one of Richardson, Winslow, or Adebayo to turn into, like, a legit star next year. Otherwise, I don't think it's enough to get a super, superstar. It's not, like, I don't think Anthony Davis considers it unless Jay Rich really... Like, he didn't break out the way I think they were hoping him to this year.
No, Richardson?
Yeah.
No, but he did take, you know, steps.
Yeah, but like,
but he needs even
to take,
so.
He needs to take a much bigger step next year.
Right.
Or else, like, he's signed to a completely reasonable deal. I mean, no matter what happens, his production, he's already earning his production and then some, but...
Mm-hmm.
They, I mean, maybe it's Winslow, or maybe it's Adebayo. And, like, again, all of these guys are super young. Like, there's still a lot of time for them to develop into these prospects. And maybe getting, with all due respect to Wade, like, maybe getting rid of him, or having him retire, having him no longer in the fold, gives the young guys a little bit more room to breathe. Like, Wade took 13.3 shots a game this year. You're going to have to redistribute that, hopefully, to some of the younger guys. So maybe that helps, but like, you still have Dion Waiters jacking shots for the next 2 years.
So how much do you prioritize keeping Josh Richardson in the fold for 2020 when they go out for cap space?
I think you have to. I think he's just so cheap. He's at 10.1 this year, 10.8 in 2020. I don't think you're going to find a player like by that time.
Maybe not a player. I was going to in a different route.
Oh, okay.
Would you take like a guy who would then expire at the same time as, let's see, who would that be? Wait a second. They can't go for double cap space in 2020. It'd have to be 2021, right?
Pat says 2020.
Huh.
I don't know how.
Well, okay. I was actually, because I was going back to Portland. Actually,
oh, okay.
And trying to find a trade because that would make sense.
Mm.
And I was just realizing that Mo Harkless would be, he's expiring the same year as Goran Dragic and Hassan Whiteside, like in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you gave Miami, just a guy like Harkless who would expire at the same time,
mm-hmm.
the 25th pick this year, a pick swap in next year, and then their unprotected pick the year after for Richardson. Like, would that be interesting? I know that you would sacrifice Richardson's game, which is significant, but you would also get like $10.8 million immediately off the cap, and you would replace it effectively with rookie salary contracts. So you would get players going forward who are younger and will have potential, but you just won't have someone of Richardson's caliber at that point in time. You'd get cap flexibility and rookies.
Yeah, I mean, if... with three picks coming aboard, I'd probably do that deal just because, I don't know. I mean, a lot could happen to Portland, especially because if that pick is 3 years, the unprotected pick is 3 years down the road. That's right when Dame and CJ expire. That would
be 2021.
Yeah, that's when Dame and CJ expire, right? Or the season. Yeah.
I don't think they will. I think they're going to sign extensions
and stay
there. But and especially because that's the whole point from Portland, they would get that guy.
Right.
Like, they would get that third guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if I'm Miami, like, because here's the thing. In 2020, 2021, the year that they're angling for this double max plan,
right.
The mid-level exception that year is projected to be around $10 million. So Josh Richardson will be earning like just over the MLE. You're not getting a player of Josh Richardson's caliber with the MLE.
Completely agree.
So, yeah. I think what they would end up doing, frankly, is probably using their picks to get out of Waiters or get out of Olynyk or get out of Johnson rather than the other way around.
Okay, interesting. That is gambling a ton, though.
Well, I think they would do it knowing they have two guys willing to sign.
Ah, okay, so back channeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, like, make the picks and then trade, you know, trade them 30 days after whatever. Like,
right.
Yeah.
I do like that you and I agree on one thing. Like, we're not in a Detroit situation here where we're kind of debating back and forth whether they should rebuild. Like, we are all the way in on this team is just not good enough.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Well, I mean, yeah. But it's not like they have... They don't have, like, any superstars who I think they could get a haul for. Like, no one is giving up anything of real value for Hassan Whiteside or even Goran Dragic if those guys opt in. I mean, I think teams would give up stuff for their young guys, but it, like, unlike Detroit, they have good young guys. I think those are the guys you want to keep around, especially since Winslow and Richardson, those are like completely reasonable deals, and Adebayo is still on a rookie contract for two more years. Like, especially if you're trying to do this double max thing, those are the types of role players you want around for your max guys. And hopefully Richardson or Winslow or Adebayo take a step forward and they're not role players. And like, maybe Adebayo breaks out as the second coming of Pascal Siakam next year. Which I think is...
That was high expectations.
Well, I mean, Adebayo is really good.
I know he is, but like Pascal specifically.
Yeah, I know. Wow, I know. But like, you know, that's the type of leap they need any of those guys to make.
And Adebayo could take that leap.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't disagree with you. He does seem like he's perfectly suitable to play both like, as a rim runner, but also as a passing hub, which is definitely optimistic. And the jump shot, to me, I could be wrong, but it doesn't seem broken at all.
No,
it does seem like there's some potential there.
Yeah. I think, if nothing else, Eric Spoelstra is begging Hassan Whiteside to opt out of his contract this year. He's like, please, please, Pat, do whatever you can. Just get this guy. You know, because like, he got moved to the bench late in the year, and he was somewhat productive in that role. But a $27 million player is just not going to be happy in that, especially going into a contract year. If he opts in, you don't think he's going to be a gigantic headache if they go with Bam Adebayo as the starter moving forward, and Hassan Whiteside knows he's playing for his next deal, knows he was a max player in 2016, knows he's not going to be in 2020. He's going to be a nightmare.
I'm looking at that cap sheet. You're absolutely right. I wonder if when Hassan opts in, if there's a deal to be made out there. Just not like just basically trade off bad contracts.
Yeah, let's just keep. We'll keep bringing up the Lakers until the end of time.
No, but maybe like Hassan Whiteside for like Jan Mahimi and stuff. No, but just to free up the minutes for Adebayo.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I would do whatever it took because I think Whiteside is just going to be poison in that locker room if he stays.
Oh, I agree, and that's what I'm saying. Like, if I think you really should. If you're the Heat, you should look into all the dumb mistakes that were made in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Of the Evan Turners, the Jan Mahimis. I was about to say Lou Alding, but he's not on the book. So
right.
Timofey Mozgov. Who else? There are a lot. Like Bismack Biyombo.
Yeah.
Like guys who are just so far beyond like just that value where you can effectively trade for them with them coming in and having no expectations of playing. Because that would free up Bam.
That's actually a really interesting way to transition into Charlotte, I think.
Then let's go for it.
Yeah, because look, Charlotte, the big question hanging over them this summer is obvious. Can they keep Kemba Walker? And a report came out recently that, you know, they were like in talks of getting Marc Gasol at the trade deadline. I seem to remember like a couple days before the actual deadline, it seemed like that was pretty much a done deal, and then the negotiations broke down over the draft pick protections that Charlotte would be sending back, and Marc Gasol ended up going to Toronto, and now Toronto's most likely going to be in the second round after tonight and probably going to beat the hell out of Philly and get to the conference finals. So
right.
Kemba is seeing that, and he's pissed off, as well he should be. So I wonder if there's a deal there with Whiteside, because, you know, we've talked about Charlotte as another team with a lot of bad contracts, but a lot of them expire after 2019-2020. So maybe you do take on Biombo or Marvin Williams or MKG if you're Miami.
Yeah, why not?
And, like, maybe that's – maybe having a Whiteside, an empowered Hassan Whiteside, who could be a lethal kind of pick-and-roll guy for Kemba, maybe that's enough to get Kemba to consider re-signing.
He's no Marc Gasol, but –
No.
Yeah.
No, he's not. But, I mean, that is the overarching question for Charlotte in the next 2.5 months. Is there anything they can do, do you think, that will keep Kemba there long term?
You see, had Kemba been younger, I think he could maybe have made a play in the draft and, like, made a push to get up higher in the draft for, like, a difference maker. But he's 29.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to be looking at rookies.
No.
If anything, maybe you should be looking to swing Malik Monk. I don't know what his value is. He's had two very underwhelming seasons in Charlotte so far.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate suggesting this because he's played so well. But, like, maybe you see what Malik Monk and Miles Bridges can get you.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate it because he's so good. But if your end goal is keeping Kemba and you want to build something around him that's sustainable, then you may have to sacrifice youth for veterans, which is usually a recipe that I hate.
Right.
But yeah, I get it. But like, what's the alternative, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what, if anything, they can do to keep him. Unless he just, I mean, there, you know, there has been talk that he just really loves Charlotte and, like, maybe he doesn't care about winning a title. But if he does, there is no pathway toward the Hornets winning a title unless they find, like, a, but even if they find, they need to find, like, a Donovan Mitchell type. Like, sure, they could get lucky and get a Giannis, but it took Giannis a couple years before he really became this. So they need to
they need to
luck into a rookie late in the lottery who is ready to perform right away, which I don't know if that guy exists this year.
Yeah.
And then you need to convince Kemba that, okay, this guy's ready to come in and drop 20 a game next year. And you also need to say, like, oh, also ignore all of the mistakes we made, all of the roster building mistakes we made over the last couple of seasons. We promise we'll be better. And I don't know.
That's just bringing me back to Tracy McGrady, though, in Orlando.
Mm.
They had the number one pick, and he was like, nope, I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that sways veterans, do you?
No.
I mean, do you really think that sways veterans?
No, that's I can't think of a deal Charlotte can make this year that tells Kemba, we're, like, ready to go right now. We'll be...
Right.
I don't think they could be a title contender no matter what, but, like, we're ready to at least compete for a second round playoff berth. We know you're sick of missing the playoffs. Like,
their second best player is also a free agent, by the way.
Jeremy Lamb?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I saw I think it was the Charlotte Observer, their editorial board wrote an editorial that was just like, we've had Kemba for so long, for his sake, we should just let him go. Like, he deserves better than this, basically.
I mean, he does. I don't think anyone disagrees with that. But at the same time, like, it's his choice. If he wants to stick around, that's fine. But then you also, like, it's such a difficult situation, because if he re-signs with them, obviously that's what they want and that's what he wants. Mm-hmm. But it still comes with certain obligations. Like, he'll return to Charlotte and he'll go, now I'm here. I know that you have me for like 4 or 5 years, whatever, but I still expect you to do your damnedest to get me help.
Right. And that
then it comes down to just basically how much faith do you have and how much trust do you have in the organization to actually pull that off?
Right. And that's the problem is if he resigns, they have $66.2 million in guaranteed salary on the books. Mm. I believe if he doesn't become Supermax eligible, if he misses the All-NBA team, which it's going to be close. I mean, he very well could get that third-team All-NBA spot. It's like him, Bradley Beal's right up for it, depending on...
Yeah.
I mean, I think Russ is going to get one of them, so I think it's probably between Beal and Kemba, most likely, for the other one. So if he does get the Supermax, I think his starting salary is like $38.15 million in this coming season. If not, it's 32.7. Either way, that puts them at the cap right there.
Yeah.
Add that to their guarantee total, they're at the $109 million cap. So they can then use... Then they could try to retain Jeremy Lamb, but like they can't... You know, they'll have their mid-level exception, but they can't go big free agent hunting. So then, yeah, it comes down to can you nail your draft picks and can you somehow flip the expiring contracts of MKG, Marvin Williams, Bismack Biyombo? But he's also got to be looking ahead and said, like, look, Nick Batum's got a $27.1 million player option in 2020, 2021. He's not turning that down. So there, like, it's going to be hard to get me free agent help next year.
You're right. You're right. Oh, God, it really hamstrings them. So basically, let's assume Walker leaves.
Yeah.
Which really is, like, maybe even for them the most... I don't want to say beneficial scenario, but maybe ultimately it will provide them with a certain level of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Like, then you can just live out those contracts in peace.
Or just trade them for worse contracts and get more assets.
That was my follow-up point. Absolutely. Yeah. Just basically call up Miami,
right.
you alluded to, and see what you can get.
Yeah.
For assets.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, that's what... Yeah, if Kemba leaves, that's the direction I take. Because then you let Lamb walk, it doesn't matter. Then you're building around Monk and Bridges, I guess.
Well, yeah. Well, at least Bridges. Monk is the guy up in the air, right?
Right, right. But then you do have potentially the 12 pick this year. Again, who knows what happens with the lottery. But that influences the direction you take in the draft, too. If you think Kemba's gone and a guy like Darius Garland is sitting there at 12, I think more inclined to take him, knowing he might get off to a slow start because of he had meniscus tear, is that right?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Some knee injury. But you need, he's probably like in that range, he's probably the best point guard on the board. Maybe Kobe White's there too. It's going to be really hard. Like, the Hornets need to get a read on Kemba by the draft because it will influence everything they do from that point forward. But, I think you're right in that if they retain Kemba, they're going to continue making a bunch of short-sighted moves, I think, to appease him. Mm-hmm. And none of them are going to bring them that much closer to legitimate championship contention. I just think they blew his window. They made a bunch of bad moves and blew his window. And it sucks, but you're going to, like, just have to let him walk. Like, in theory, you should have traded him a year ago because this outcome was very apparent. And it's, it's why I'm arguing the Wizards should trade Bradley Beal this summer, because I think if you're the Wizards, you're going to come 2 years down the road, and they're going to be in the same spot where it's very clear their cap sheet is just so screwed that they can't bring in real free agent help, and Beal's going to realize that. And, I just don't know. I know, it's a lot more money if you stay, but at a certain point, after you're making $100+ million, I don't know. Isn't that enough?
But it's always the people who don't have $100 million that say stuff like that.
I know. Yeah.
But you're right. Like, theoretically, you should be right. I don't know. The thing is, with Kemba, it's all about the loyalty factor. We don't talk like this regarding like Durant, or Jimmy Butler, or even Tobias Harris. Like, this is about Kemba's fiercely loyalty towards the city of Charlotte, which is very commendable.
Yeah,
and like I won't blame him for whatever he does, but I totally understand that him also staying would also you know, put that organization at you know, the disadvantage of not being able to think long term and build like an established culture, yada yada yada.
Yeah.
Like, I think the most interesting thing here would be, like, imagine if Charlotte wins the lottery, right?
Yeah.
Like, that would help them out on so many levels. Yeah. But, like, what do you do? Do you value Sion higher than the future of Kemba to the point where you ship out Sion for a legitimate star to appease Kemba?
No.
Or do we just go, okay, we have Sion. We know we have Sion.
Yeah.
So we're going to stick with Sion, and then we're just going to start from there, and we're going to let Kemba be happy elsewhere or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, because it doesn't make sense for those two. Like, Sion is 18 years old.
Right,
and,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, if the Hornets win the lottery, under no circumstances should they trade Sion for a veteran to keep Kemba happy.
Right. It should just be a full-on rebuilding process.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, I mean, if that's enough to keep Kemba, then that's fine too. But, no.
Right, but that's the concerning part for me, because then Kemba's going to stay there, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be better.
Yeah.
So that's only going to be like a one-off draft pick. Like, yeah. They're not going to find themselves in the lottery again for at least a couple of years. And Kemba's going to age all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sion is going to be like in his mid-20s. And he's not going to have like a partner that's in his age group that is good, because they've been drafting maybe in like the 20s for a couple of years.
Right. Well, I think at least if that happens, if you win Sion, you re-sign Kemba. By 2021, 2022, right now, the only guy they have under guaranteed contract, or not even guaranteed, but a team option that they will likely pick up, is Miles Bridges. So I think...
So free agency.
Yeah, I think in 2021, you could actually make some noise.
Yeah. Like, who wouldn't play with Sion, right?
Sion and Kemba. Because Kemba will still be good in 2 years. It's the back end of that contract that you worry about.
Yeah, that's his John Wall concern. And yeah. I mean, that was always the concern with Wall, right? Like, the final 2 years, and then now it's all the four.
That's the concern with all of these max guys who you're maxing at 28, 29. It's the same thing with Jimmy Butler. Like, you're not concerned about Jimmy Butler the first 2 years. It's the last three that you're worried about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he can sign for five.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a whole other conversation. I think, like, it's worth getting into it ahead of free agency. Just like the whole max contract dilemma, super maxes, like what the NBA should do about this, because it's forcing so many teams into these bad decisions that we've seen. Like, you're kind of screwed either way, and it's going to happen potentially with Beal this summer too. With, you know, if he becomes eligible for the super max, then Washington either needs to give it to him or he's going to be pissed and like try to ask out. So.
It was a nice thought. Like, the Supermax theory was nice. And the execution of it it hasn't worked.
And I think there's a way around it that you can keep a similar system in place, but just don't count the full 35% toward your cap sheet.
Yeah.
Like, they can pay the same amount of money, but only 30% or only 25%, whatever. Only that much counts against your cap sheet. So you're not totally hamstrung. Because, it's just you can't build a team around multiple players earning 35% of the cap. It just doesn't work.
Right. Right. So, that would confuse people on Twitter trades.
I know. Yeah, they made it so easy. Remember, it used to be like raises were 7.5% every year. And you calculated maxes based on like BRI instead of just like an even 30%. I love the new system because it's so much easier to figure out players' max deals. But yeah, I mean, the super max system in particular needs some refinement.
I agree.
But yeah, I mean, it's going to be... I'm nervous for Hornets fans this summer. But I promise, no matter what happens with Kemba, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. It just could be... Just could take a couple of years... depending on what happens in the lottery and then what happens elsewhere.
Right. And then just don't go out and sign like a Tony Parker type for 2 years.
Right.
That might help too.
Right. Well, Mort, I think that's a good place to wrap up. We will be back hopefully with a round two preview later this week. We'll also have some more By Felicias. It could be as early as tonight that we'll have more teams ready for the chopping block. So we'll hit those in the coming days as well. In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, I know you're going to see Endgame tomorrow. Enjoy, my man.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. We didn't plan to record today, so the last time I was like, hey, next time, I'll tell you all about it, but it's tomorrow, and I am so nervous about spoilers, because embargo on reviews? Has been lifted.
Oh, for
so
real?
Now, yeah.
Oh, God.
So now those things are coming out, and I'm just like staying off of Twitter and Facebook and all those platforms, because just you know, 24 more hours.
Yeah. Everyone, we made it this far. Stay strong these next couple days.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Enjoy, and go. Please, God, Jared Dudley, don't start another fight tonight.
That would be nice.
All right, later, man.
Take care, man.